Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today on the program. Rich Guthrie is here once again to answer your questions about them. Rich is a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and compiler at one time of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. He's the expert. He's the go-to guy on birds around these parts. The number to call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also comment. You can email us, right? Okay, right? Email. Everybody's got that, right? It's voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. Tweet us at WAMCVoxPop or go to Facebook if you wish. Facebook.com/WAMC Radio. But again, the number here on this program is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back.
Hey, Ray. Glad to be here.
Oh, you did the old switcheroo as we were changing the furniture. He changed his microphone, Zach. He's on mic three now, I think.
Hi, Ray.
There it is.
Here I am.
Nice to have you here. I thought you weren't here for a minute.
Here I am.
So, what does a turkey vulture look like? I think I had a sighting.
Well, in the air, they look like a sailing bird. They sail through the air like a schooner at sea.
Okay.
They very effortlessly glide through the air, very seldom flap their wings, and they have this rather unique dihedral, they call it, where the wings are held high up.
Okay.
In a V shape.
Okay.
Where they float through the air, rocking back and forth like a ship at sea with the waves, and occasionally will flap, but that's their long-distance ID.
Even lower to the ground?
Even lower to the ground. But when they're really low, then they probably have to flap because what they use is they use the air currents. And so the higher up you are, the better, the more turbulent the air may be.
Okay, well, I was at my son's baseball game the other day, and I saw what I thought was a turkey vulture. How big did they get? This one was easily 15 to 20 feet across.
Right. 20 feet away from you?
No, 20 feet. It was rather large.
It was probably a Boeing 747.
Oh, come on. No, this was, I think it was a turkey. It couldn't have been. That's the biggest
thing
in the
air,
right?
They are big. Yeah, they are the biggest. The largest wingspan off the top of my head, I'd say yes.
Does it have white
72 inches,
tips
no white
on the wings?
No white. No, the one with the white tips on the wings would be the black vulture. They have white patches on the wing close to the turkey vulture, but their head is black, not red.
Oh, this didn't have a red head.
Right. Well, a black head and a black vulture. And they are new to the neighborhood. They've recently expanded their range from south to north. And I'll tell you something. They're a lot more assertive than the turkey vulture is. They will find themselves closer to people.
It almost caught a fly ball.
Intentionally?
Yeah.
Anyway, the black vulture is also in the neighborhood. And they have white patches on the towards the tip of the wings.
That must have been.
And they are large.
Yeah.
And they do not have that that graceful flight of the turkey vulture. They're more like a vulture on training wheels. They're constantly trying to gain altitude, flapping away, flap, flap, flap. The turkey vulture is so graceful, like ballet in the air.
Well, let's go. We have so many calls already, Rich.
All right.
So let's just go right to the phones, and we'll start out with Susan in Red Hook. Susan, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Ray. How are you doing today?
Good.
My question is about bluebirds. That is, my daughter and husband built a bluebird box at their library. They were instructed. They had somebody instruct them how to do it. Mm-hmm. Last year, we got it up too late. This year, so we cleaned it out. This year, we have a family.
Wonderful.
And we're really happy and excited. But researching, I saw some horrible things that other birds can do to these poor little chicks.
This is true.
And I'm wondering what I can do. Is there anything that I can do at this point to help mom and dad protect them? And about how long do they, they're about a week old. They hatched earlier last week. There's three of them. And what can I do?
As a philosophical question, before you answer the practical question.
The answer is?
Should you, in fact, interfere with nature?
Intervene?
Well,
okay.
Yes, of course. And there are a couple of reasons why. Number one is you invited the birds to your backyard. You set them up in your neighborhood, and you are more or less adopted them and take some responsibility for their well-being. And that goes in a lot of different ways, from feeding birds to nest boxes to caring for them if they move into your back porch, onto the light fixture or the old Christmas wreath that's left on the front door, all those things. And then the other thing, too, is that you just want to be nice to them. You know, they're there. Bluebirds are beautiful, nice neighbors, and good, nice to have around. Now, as far as the other birds are concerned, there's not much you can really do about it. The birds that cause them any harm are few and far between while they are in the nest. Once they're out of the nest, then they're, you know, they have to be careful of hawks and owls and that sort of thing. But while they're in the nest, the wren will sometimes enter the nest, but once the eggs hatch, the wren will have no interest in getting into the nest anymore. Then the house sparrow, which is the nastiest of them all when they're around, because they will enter the nest and they will actually do harm to the young.
Yeah.
They will kill the young.
That's exactly what I saw.
Yeah. Once the young are large enough, they can fend for themselves. So I think that just if you do have house sparrows around, there's not a heck of a lot that you can do to discourage them from coming in. But the likelihood is very slim that they will. It's only on a rare occasion that house sparrows will try to enter a bluebird nest box and take it over, basically, is what they're trying to do.
Right, exactly.
So I think you're past the danger point now. I think you guys will be okay.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest here on Vox Pop. It's the Bird Show, 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Trish in Poughkeepsie. Trish, you're on.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
In the last couple of weeks, my three backyard free feeders have been overrun by a combined flock of cowbirds, starlings, grackles, and
red-winged blackbird.
Red-winged blackbird.
All right.
And they're eating me out of house and home, and they're pushing away my pretty little songbird.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what to do to get rid of them, if there's a possibility of getting rid of them.
Well, there is. First of all, a large group like that is likely just passing through. They'll be on their way any day now. So one thing you could do is sort of like encourage them to leave is turn off the tap. Just withhold the bird seed for a little while, and they will get the hint and move on. They're really on their way home someplace else.
Well, I figured that because they were here last year, but they didn't seem to stay longer than a week then.
Yeah.
And they've been here 2 weeks now, and I've been spending a fortune on bird food.
Right. Well,
sounds like in-laws.
they found your address. Now they know you. So there must be little markers that they put in the sky out there, so that, you know, like the hobos used to do. So just cut off the supply for a little while. They'll move on, and the resident nice birds that you like will be still around, and we'll be back in a couple of days. So
okay, could I ask another question?
Sure,
we'd love it. Go ahead.
Why crows are supposed to be so intelligent, and I know they are really, but when there's roadkill that they're after, and they're sitting in the middle of the road, and you come along in your car, they get up and fly away, and then they come back to it after you've passed.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they pick it up and take it somewhere safe?
Well, it's
too
served,
heavy?
No, that's their table. It's a dinner table. It's, they're okay
they
with doing that as long
safe.
As they know to get out of the way. And in a situation like that, by the way, whether it's crows or squirrels or the possum or somebody on the road like that, I toot the horn. Awareness could, you know, just give him a startle to make a move.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I make certain they know I'm coming.
Yes, right. Well, it's always a good practice. And, you know, that's the roadkill diner. They're out there.
Delicious. Trish, thanks a lot.
Yeah, hey.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. 800-348-2551. Rich, you have some events coming up. Before the break here, you could tell us about them.
Well, I do, actually. You know, I love talking about that recent trip I took to Cuba with Birds Caribbean.
Right.
It's a not-for-profit organization that is supporting conservation of birds and habitat, and also supporting the economy of the Caribbean islands. And I have put together a nice little program that I offer for free at various locales. And the invitation is out for any public library or group that wants to sit in and listen to my story about the birds, the people, the cars, and cigars of Cuba.
How do people get in touch with you?
Well, they can easily. My email address, my name is Richard P. Guthrie. At gmail.com.
And how do you spell Guthrie?
G Guthrie.
Okay, so it's richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
Correcto.
Okay, that's great. Now, you've done several of these presentations.
I've done a couple of them. One of them is a direct result of when I was here the last time.
A fellow
contacted me from Amsterdam Public Library, and zing, I was right there.
And so now you've done it a few times. It's getting better now, right?
Let's hope.
You've worked on
worked out a few of the kinks, and yes, here we. I've gotten rid of the bad jokes, and we're working on some new ones.
Some good jokes, some Fidel Castro jokes. Throw them in there.
Well, we try to stay away from that, but okay. We have a couple up our sleeve there. So it's going to be. I'll give you the dates if you want. June 2nd in Saugerties, New York. June 8th in New Baltimore, New York, at the Firehouse.
Yeah.
And. June 15th at the Coxsackie Library. So that's Saugerties Library, New Baltimore Firehouse, and Coxsackie Library.
And you'll be appearing with Jerry Vale in the Poconos a little later in the summer, so that's pretty good. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Richard P. Guthrie, after-dinner speaker, entertainer, and all-around bon vivant is our guest today. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Skidmore College, announcing Summer at Skidmore programs and events with Skidmore Jazz Institute, Dakota Chamber Music Institute, and Doug Verone Dancers Workshop, skidmore.edu/summer. Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, for 14 years, offering plant spirit medicine and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit, clareepearson.net. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. The Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival, announcing the 5th annual series of 10 summer events sponsored by Saratoga Congregations and Skidmore Office of Jewish Life, saratogajewishculturalfestival.org for schedule. And George Heigl, Cowan's representative, available for estate, trust, and full collection evaluations and consultations in the Capital Region. 518-396-7974.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is the phone number. Rich Guthrie, the lockbox is open, man. You know about the lockbox?
It's still locked, but it's open for... Come on in.
Yeah, so what it is it's a way for us to get the fun drive kick-started before the on-air drive begins on Monday, June 6th.
Great idea.
So as of 2 p.m., we have $142,088 in the lockbox. If you would like to shorten the on-air drive and you want to make your pledge now, we would love that. WAMC.org is the website, and we have inducements. Boy, we got something really nice. We have a... Vote WAMC package. So if you make, first of all, you can pledge whatever you want, from $5, $2, $1,000, whatever. But if you hit the $100 mark, you'll get yourself a limited edition. And I don't know if they're in here right now, but it's a Vote WAMC t-shirt. And on one side, it has Vote with the checkbox for the V, and then for WAMC. And on the back, on the front, it has our logo with the microphone and the...
Sunburst.
Radiation. Sunburst.
Sunburst.
And it comes with a matching limited edition cup that says Vote for WAMC, coffee cup. So that is a $100 pledge. But anything you can do to kick in the lockbox would be appreciated. WAMC.org is the website. This one came in via email, Rich, before we get back to the phones, from Lynn in Saratoga Springs. We have creepers on our property. Where do they nest?
Creepers.
What's a creeper?
A brown creeper. It's a mysterious little brown bird that actually creeps up the side of the tree. It's a tiny little bird with special clawed feet and stiff tail, just like a woodpecker. So it can climb up the side of the tree. Tiny, it's very mouse-like. They go up a tree in little spirals, and then they fly down to the bottom of the next tree and go up that tree, looking for spider eggs and little bugs and stuff like that. And they, you know, for a little guy, they have a wonderful loud song, a beautiful, it sounds like you're taking a handful of notes and throwing them down the stairs. Yeah, it's kind of like a tinkly downward spiral.
It's like Ornette Coleman.
Close.
Okay.
And then they nest in little crevices in the bark of the tree. So if you have a shagbark hickory or an old sugar maple, silver maple, or perhaps a tree with a broken branch with a little snag in it, that's where they nest, right against the side of the tree.
So the question Sharon had was, just where do they nest?
Where do they nest?
So she doesn't want to get rid of them.
I wouldn't.
No, they're lovely?
Oh, of course. I mean, they're totally innocuous with a beautiful song.
All right, very nice. Let's go back to the lines, and Michael in Saratoga is next. Michael.
Hello?
Michael, are you there?
Hello?
Oh, it's not Michael. Hi, who is this?
No, it's Nikki. I said Nikki. I don't think they understood me.
Hi there.
Very good. Okay, we're batting 1,000. Hey, good. Nice to have you here.
I have had a very unusual bird sighting. I have blackbirds, but I saw a dry-colored blackbird.
No, you did. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
We took a picture, and I'm going to, now that I know your, email, I'm going to send it to you, in the next
couple
days.
Okay, I'm waiting for the picture.
Why are you skeptical, Rich?
The tricolor blackbird looks almost identical to the red-winged blackbird, but here's the key. It's found only in the Central Valley of California.
I know, that's what I was looking up in the book, and I looked at the book again, and my other half, Carl was looking too, and he said, that's what it is.
I know.
And he took a picture.
It looks almost identical to the red-winged blackbird. The red-winged blackbird will at times have a white stripe on its wing, such as the tricolored blackbird does. But it's just the peculiarity of an individual or two of red-winged blackbirds. I would love it if you had. In fact, do send me the picture because birds have wings and they do fly. But
and if you're wrong, I expect an apology to
Nikki. You'll get it. You'll get it in gold script.
Okay, good. All right, Nikki. So he will apologize.
It was making this very unusual noise. That's why I was looking out, like a long beep, like a single noise. I never heard it before.
Well, that's what they do. That's also characteristic of the red-winged blackbird.
Yes.
The red-winged blackbird has had alarm call. Not alarmed at you. There's probably maybe a fox or a hawk or a cat in the neighborhood, and that's what they do. They have that alarm call that is that long whistle.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen. I got your email, and we'll get the picture to you. And if it is what I said, please get back to us. Okay.
You will hear from me.
And you'll hear from me too. Thanks,
absolutely.
Nikki.
All right, you have a good day. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You know, why do you want to shoot people down?
I don't.
You want to ruin their day.
We are a science. We are, and we need to be. We need to be. I'm the regional reviewer for eBird, which is that document, that scientific repository for bird sightings all around this area. And we have to be very careful that the information that goes in there to an archive that people will rely on is accurate.
Listen, you saw a near mythical bird.
I did,
and
indeed.
And people don't believe you. And how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel great because I know the system is working.
All right, Rich, you're no fun. Let's go to Kerry in Plainfield. Kerry, you're on.
Yeah, hi, Rich. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
I live in a rural area alongside of a pond, and right now there's hundreds of tree swallows starting just inches over the water. Now, my question is, I have a large garden near the pond. I got 14 nesting boxes, and there's so many swallows that it's difficult to watch them. And, I'll focus on one box, and it seems like there's so many different ones going into that box. Like it's almost like a communal situation.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that, or is it just the female and her mate that's going in?
So it's like a clown car; they all keep going in.
Well, yeah, it's more like a communal situation where it's a free for all. Come one, come all. Hello there, next type of thing.
Yeah.
And while the tree swallows and other swallows will pair up, there is a lot of hanky panky going on out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they'll fool around, but sooner or later they'll get it sorted out and they'll become the best guy, and the rest of them will just have to go elsewhere.
Wow.
One more quick question too.
Sure.
For the tree swallows or any of the swallows, perch versus no perch on the box.
No perch. No perch.
Okay, that's what I thought.
You know, if there's a perch nearby, great. You know, a little shrub or a tree or a fence post, that's great. But not necessary.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks
great.
A lot. So the swallow has this kind of free love thing going on?
Well, you know, you don't want to put too much license into it, but yeah.
That's... I don't know.
And sometimes it gets
very
a little
racy.
Raucous. Right. Yeah, it does. And sometimes it gets a little contested.
Bob and Carol, Ted and Swallow. Let's go over to Sharon in Kinderhook. Sharon, you're on.
Sharon, it's Sean every time. They always
for
call
Pete's
me
sake.
Sharon.
Listen,
what's up with that?
On the page, I thought it said shaven, and I was going to ask, have you shaved?
This is the second time that you guys call me Sharon.
Hey, man, I don't know. I double
okay,
checked.
Well,
he said Sharon.
We're going to try to get it right now.
Sean, how you doing, man? You're on.
I'm doing great. Thank you for taking my call. Now, I saw, because I commute every day. I live in Kinderhook, obviously, and, you know, my entire life, and I'm only 43, I've never seen a black vulture, and I work at New Paltz. I commute an hour every day.
Okay.
And I saw a whole gaggle of them.
Yes.
And they were, man, they were getting after something. I don't know what it was, but they were all going after something they were picking at.
That's what they
and
do.
It was funny. Yeah, and it was funny because I'd never seen them, and I thought they were crows at first, but then I got a closer look at them, and they're very bold. I mean, they don't even care that you're there.
Exactly.
You know?
Like I said, they are a lot more assertive than a turkey vulture, in fact, than most other birds. And, you know, they'll actually, you almost have to walk around them when they're on target.
Really?
And New Paltz is a hot spot for black vultures. For some reason, that was one of the first places where they, I don't want to say colonized, but moved into.
Where did they come from?
They came from the south.
Okay.
They just expanded their range northward. And once they knocked on a door and the door opened, they're in. And I think it's great.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, the one of the ladies that I work with was telling me that they were on top of somebody's roof and they won't leave.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's what they do. That's the black vulture.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Sean, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Shaven, whatever your name is. Let's go over to Ellen in Schenectady. Ellen, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Rich, I've got a young bird watcher in my family. My great-nephew, who's about to be 8.
Okay, all right.
Lives in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Public school, and they're studying birds.
Mm-hmm.
And his birthday is coming up, and I was wondering what, if any, recommendation you would have for a young bird watcher. He doesn't have, you know, any equipment or anything yet.
Well, let me suggest that an inexpensive pair of binoculars will go a long, long way. I was about that age when I got started. And, and I started, of course, you know, just a kid, and no binoculars. And when somehow I had a pair of binoculars back then, this goes back a ways.
Yeah, pterodactyls.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We used to ground our own glass the beach glass. Anyway, back they weren't so good. But nowadays, there are wonderful pairs of binoculars out there that you could get. They're very inexpensive. And that would be a wonderful step forward. It just opens it just changes the
world.
Are
there any also like guides for young bird watchers, sort of like Peterson's, but for kids?
There are a few. In fact, there's one out there. And again, going back, you may find it in a used bookstore or a reprint of the old Beginner's Guide to Birds by Roger Torrey Peterson. It's a wonderful book. And then I would peruse the local bookstores to see if they do have something along the field guides like that. I would not get one of those that has all of the birds from all around, because then you end up with things, you know, as I was when I was a kid, one of my buddies was convinced that he saw European tree sparrows in the neighborhood. Well, that's only because he saw a picture in a book that really he should not have been looking at. It just leads to some confusion. I don't want to talk about blackbirds or anything like that. It just leads to more confusion. But there are some very simple guides that would work. So either a nice field guide or a pair of binoculars, or one of these apps if he has a smartphone.
He's eight.
He's eight. Everybody's got smartphones.
He doesn't have a smartphone.
Every
he's eight. Does. Come on.
Anyway, if one of those, there are a number of good apps that are out there that that would work as well. New age.
Oh, well, maybe his mom or dad could put it on their phone.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Obviously not going out by himself.
Okay. So I would do that. The binoculars are a good bird guide like that.
Okay. Ellen. Well, terrific. Thank you so
much. And the other thing is in touch with the Museum of Natural History in New York City or one of the bird clubs, the New York City Audubon Society, a gift membership in one of those organizations, the Brooklyn Bird Club.
Oh, yeah.
Queens County Bird Club, whichever appropriate, you know, whatever borough there is.
Ellen, thanks a lot for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Let's go over to David in Williamstown. David, you're on.
Hey, fellas, how are you? By the way, before I get to my main question, we do have black vultures over here in Williamstown. Saw them for the first time last year.
Lucky you.
Yeah, and just as Rich described them, they're pretty aggressive, and you basically got to walk around them.
Mm-hmm. Makes them outstay their welcome.
Yeah, this particular group, it was a mother showing her three young ones how to deal with some roadkill, a dead squirrel, like right on the Williams College campus on Route 2.
Ouch.
So there were a lot of people that were... Googling what was going on. But listen, I call because my parents live in northern Dutchess County, which is fairly rural. They're part of a subdivision, but they're on the fringes of that, so there's farmland that's long been uncultivated and vacant. And for the last, I don't know, 15 years or so, they've hung bird boxes out and stuff, and they get some wrens, usually some robins in the bushes and so forth. But this year, and it's on a half an acre, it is landscape, but they've got a cardinal nest in the firebush underneath the bathroom window, about 20 yards away in a box that usually has wrens or something else in it. They got bluebirds, and then they've also got a goldfinch nest. And I'm just wondering what might have changed or if this is just the luck of the draw.
Well, favorable habitat for each of those, which is different for each one. I'm curious, if you put out, you build it, they will come. So a happy... habitat in a backyard is just an open invitation for nice things to happen like that. I'm a little curious about the goldfinch nest, though, because it's very early for goldfinches to be nesting. They usually don't start until around August.
Well, I haven't actually seen this. I have seen the bluebirds in action mm-hmm. last week, and I don't doubt my mother. She sees the cardinals going in and out of the bushes. But my father, who is a on a scale of 1 to 10, he's probably a 6 or 7 as far as a birder goes. He was the one who said, and I think we have a goldfinch nest on the property as well.
Well, okay, let me...
And he could be wrong.
Well, let's just suggest yellow warbler, which looks very much like a goldfinch. They're both yellow.
Okay.
And the yellow warblers are nesting now. They like backyards.
What does it sound like?
Actually, it has a beautiful little song. It sounds like it's saying, sweet, 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 sugar is sweet. A little mnemonic.
Okay.
Very good. All right, well, okay. I'll tell him that, and I'm actually going to be there tomorrow, so I'll listen in.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot,
well, keep
David.
Us posted.
We appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Judy in Gloversville. Judy, you're on.
Hi. thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I was just at a friend's house who has a big apple tree, and out on the apple tree was a great big bird. It looked like a robin, only it was kind of peachy or lemony yellow and black and had a little white on its wings. And it was the size of a robin, and it looked like it was going from bud to bud.
Bud to bud. I'm going to suggest that you had an oriole there.
Oh.
A lemon yellow bird would possibly be, and they like apple trees, the orchard oriole. The young mm-hmm. or female orchard oriole will look like that. The second year, in other words, born last year.
Okay, orchard I didn't oriole. Realize they were that big.
They're a little bit smaller than a robin, but they have that lemon yellow coloration to them. And so let me just offer that as a possibility. And in the meantime, I'm going to think of other chances what it might be.
Yeah, because it had the little bit of white on the wings, and the yellow was all the way up his tail underneath to the end.
Mm-hmm.
If that describes it, a
lemon or lime yellow, would fit the orchard oriole.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's good.
And if you get a picture of it, you have my email address. Feel free.
Okay,
and
I'll
then
do
we
that.
Can verify that down the road.
Yeah, I came home, but I can go back over there. Sure.
Sure.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
We appreciate the call. This one came in via email from Alan. Why are birds attracted to shiny things, such as my car, if you get my drift? What can be done to discourage this behavior? That's from Alan.
Okay, well.
Not our Alan.
Not
our Alan.
Well, it could be. But any event, they like shiny cars, with Alans, any Alans. They're attracted mainly to the reflection, I would suspect.
Yeah.
The window, the mirror, the headlights, the hubcaps, that sort of thing. And I know that can be very annoying, but it's basically a male trying to defend its territory away from what it perceives to be another male. It's only his reflection. So if you cut off the reflection, the problem goes away.
Interesting.
Unless it's a very persistent robin or cardinal or blue jay or whatever. And in that case, you will have to be a little more innovative. Covering the mirrors with a plastic bag or paper bag will do it. After a little while, they'll give up and move on, especially after they get through their territorial defense stage.
When does that end?
As soon as their nesting is more or less secure. Right now, they're very insecure. They just, remember we were talking about those swallows. Well, some of them are less tolerant of that sort of stuff.
Well, I see.
And
inferiority
they don't
complex.
Like the party.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. It's the Bird Show, and the home stretch is on the way.
Support for WMC comes from the Wild Center, dedicated to enriching connections to the natural world. Wildcenter.org for details. Nine Pin Cider Works, serving New York hard ciders made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Sunday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary, consider the apple. NinePinCider.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts. For over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing, full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. The Ashokan Center, presenting a uke extravaganza featuring six ukulele soloists playing jazz, Hawaiian, folk, blues, and rock on Saturday, May 28th at 8 p.m., where nature inspires. AshokanCenter.org. And Interactive Media Consulting, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing logo and print design, web development, and digital marketing throughout the Capital Region and beyond. Marketing, creative, and business ideas since 1996. iMediaConsult.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by Rich Guthrie for our monthly bird program. Our number is 800-348-2551. And, Rich, the bookings for your Cuba extravaganza just keep rolling in.
Here they are.
You mentioned it once during the show, and now you got another gig.
Bingo. Yeah. Gigs are coming.
And it's especially good when you work for free. You get a lot of gigs.
Well, this one here is going to be for a meal.
Ah!
I
talk for your supper, eh?
Yeah, more or less. Right. This is a potluck, so I'm going to have to bring something other than my bad jokes and pictures.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Will there be any room left in the car?
A bag of potato chips
all
might
right,
do. But
enough.
Anyway, this is a potluck on May 29th, Memorial Day weekend, the Sunday afternoon, a potluck at Singles Outreach Services up there on New Connor Road in Albany, New York. Check out their website. You can find out more information.
So, I mean, do you have people like there were deadheads who would go to every dead show? Do you have people who just come and see every
the
one
groupies,
of the Rich Guthrie Cuba shows?
We haven't built up to that stage yet.
Oh,
but
it was,
you know,
really good tonight.
Well, you know, keep an eye out for them. We'll give them free admission like everybody else.
All right, fair enough. This one came in from Mark, and an interesting question. Says pigeons seem to be fixtures in any urban area. So where would they live if there weren't any more cities? What actually is the natural habitat for a pigeon?
Cliffs in Europe.
Really?
Yes.
Well, how did they get
here? Old Dover cliffs. The White Cliffs of Dover and the rocky crags of Scotland and Sweden and Norway. The rock pigeon, as they're actually called.
How did they get here?
They were brought over by colonists and, you know, for various reasons, partly for food and partly for pets.
Squab.
Squab, more or less, you know.
Right, let's go to Adam in Grafton. Adam, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
So I have seen three separate eagles, bald eagles, in the area.
Mm-hmm.
One in Schuylerville on the farm I work at, and I've seen that one a few times, I think. One down in Grafton near the Tomahawk Reservoir, and then one in Colony. I was wondering if they're becoming more prevalent in the area. Basically, what's their story?
Well, the eagle, the bald eagle, is one of the remarkable comeback stories. The comeback kid. They were virtually, well, they were actually wiped out.
By DDT?
By DDT and unfortunately by shooting and other things, but mainly by the pesticides, the poisons. But after the pesticides were banned, my good friends and colleagues at the Environmental Conservation were very instrumental in convincing the governor of New York and the governor of Wisconsin and the governor of Alaska to let us adopt some eagles, bring them back to New York, and release them here. And it was such a workable, a wonderfully successful program that not only did New York undertake it, but Massachusetts and Maine and Maryland and Florida and New Jersey, they all get in on a bad wagon. Everybody's throwing bald eagles out the window. And it was, you know, they just kind of looked, said, okay, works for me. Plenty of nice habitat, a much cleaner environment. And the evidence is there that it's true. And so, yes, I can go down to the Hudson River by where I live in Greene County, New York, and look up and down and see three or four bald eagles at a time.
Hmm.
And
wow.
just today, I'm sitting in my house looking out the window, and there were two young bald eagles and one adult bald eagle. If you want to go see an eagle in this area, in the Albany area, I would suggest you go down to Queeman's Landing at the very south end on the Hudson River, the south end of Albany County. And go down to the boat launch there and watch. You'll see eagles coming to a nest carrying food. Or at Henry Hudson Park in the town of Bethlehem. And I'm sure there are many, many other eagle nests out there that you can actually just pull up to the side of the parking area, look out, and there they are.
And they're usually near water?
Yes.
They eat fish?
They eat fish, primarily eat fish. But they will take other things that they can, especially in a wintertime when the water is frozen and ice covered. Then they'll look for things that they'll be the vultures will be gone, but the eagles will still
and
be here.
Will they strictly eat carrion or will they kill their food?
Oh, they will catch food if they can.
Yeah.
I've watched them take in a Canada goose up on Saratoga Lake.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Big as that. Yeah. And just recently I watched one, you know, unfortunately, but it happens, it'd take a young wood duck from a pond in Albany County.
Oh, I'll be darned. All right, let's go to Laura in Stockbridge. Laura, you're on.
Hello. Thank you. I returned from a few days out of town, and my birdhouse was on the ground from a wind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to figure out, there's a nest inside it, but the birds aren't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Probably either tree swallows or bluebirds, probably tree swallows. And I'm wondering whether I put it back up and they haven't returned, whether I should sort of clean out the nest so they can start over or just leave it and hope that they'll come back or someone else will come back.
Well, if you the likelihood is that they or someone else will come back. It will be hard to tell which is which. But, yeah, clean it out. Because in many bird species, nest building is part of the pair bonding. And it's a shared task and one that they participate in. And it's a nice thing. So either way, but I would clean it out, set it up again, and put out the welcome mat. And sorry about what happened there, but
So it's been probably 4 or 5 days. So if they haven't come back now, start over.
Yeah, birds will do that. They will recycle. They'll start again. Many times that does happen in nature in the wild.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number here. Let's go to Perry in Little Falls. Perry.
Yes. Just a question on if you could give some facts or attributes of a Baltimore Oriole. It's my favorite bird. I love their song and their color. Is there anything interesting else about them?
Well, down our way, we call them the New Baltimore Oriole.
Hey, that's funny. Do you use that in your Cuba show?
I try to avoid it, but when forced to, I will.
I don't think you should focus group that one.
On that then. Anyway, the Baltimore Oriole, beautiful bird. They're black and orange, named after the colors of not the city, but the colors of the Baltimore family, which is also reflected on the Maryland flag. They winter in South America. They come up here for the summer. And they build a wonderful nest. It's a woven intricately, very strong, sturdy nest. It's almost like a bag hanging from a tree, and they lay their eggs at the bottom of this pendulant nest that's at the end of a branch, which is very cleverly placed. It makes it very difficult for predators to get at it, because it's at the end of a branch. The squirrels have a hard time getting to it. The nest will be persistent after the leaves are gone in the fall. You'll look around and you say, there's another one, there's another one, there's another one. They do have a beautiful song. And one other thing, that if you are fortunate enough to have an oriole that had learned from visiting a feeder down south, maybe South Florida or Texas, is a half an orange sliced and put onto a snag on a tree. Once they discover that, they like to come to oranges that are placed in a tree.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I had that nest, like you say, I called it a sock-looking type thing.
It looks like a sock, yeah.
And it was in a tree right out my window that I could lay in bed and look at. And every around May 10th, they would come back. And then one year, they did not. I imagine something happened to that bird and didn't keep the cycle going, but that went on for about 10 years. And but they're around in other, you know, other trees.
Are they, you do have them around your neighborhood today? I mean, this year?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Good.
Yeah,
okay.
I love their song. It just goes on and on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. So will a robin use the same nest as last year?
Some do, most don't. Other birds may use that. I have a wonderful picture of a mourning dove sitting in a robin's nest.
Ah.
But they like to build a new nest each time. They may use the same one that year, subsequent broods. And some birds will have two or three broods in the course of a nesting season.
All right, let's go to Bonnie in Sharon, Connecticut. Hello there, Bonnie.
Hi there, Ray.
You're on.
And Rich.
Hi.
This is a two-parter, but one is a memory thing. I had a bird crash into one of my windows a couple of years ago, and I thought it was a goner, and I went outside, and it had landed upside down in a plant that I had put outside, and it wasn't a goner, but it was exceedingly stunned, and I do what I do with all stunned birds. I very gently put it up into a basket and covered the basket. And let's see if it could, like, kind of come to its own for a while. And it did.
Mm-hmm.
And I, unfortunately, didn't take a picture of it because I have never seen that bird before again. And I haven't found it in any of my books. And trust me, I've got several books.
Mm-hmm.
But it occurs to me from something I looked at that it might have been a female orchard oriole. Except that if this is dull green, then they describe it not well, because this was the most beautiful green bird I have ever seen.
And where are you, roughly speaking?
Northwest corner of Connecticut.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm in a very wooded, mostly wooded with a little bit of open spaces around me, and I do have a tad bit of open lawn and bird houses and all that fun stuff.
Okay, well, orchard oriole is a real possibility, but how about scarlet tanager, the female scarlet tanager? Did you check that possibility? They look very similar. They have, you know, subtle differences.
How green is green? We're talking like the pictures that I'm seeing in for the female orchard oriole, it's kind of like a light yellow green.
Yes, that would be
right. The thing that I saw was like closer to being like teal green, medium green.
Hmm. Well,
I don't remember wing bars. Unfortunately, I don't remember wing bars or eye rings. I do remember that it had a rather long, pointy beak the way an oriole does.
Well, then that would, the tanager has a long beak, but rather stout. So
No, this is long, pointy.
Somewhat scimitar shaped. I would go.
Yeah.
The orchard oriole is a real possibility. They like a little more space between their trees, but, you know, they move around, and she could have been looking for
she slammed right into this window.
Wow. Yeah, very sorry to hear that, but I'm glad that
she
helped it recuperate, yes.
Yeah, and I just wanted to know if that's a possibility.
Yes.
Okay, so that's the bird.
Really, and, really possible. Yes.
Okay. The other thing is like something that just happened a couple of days ago. We have two bluebird houses, and one of our bluebird houses didn't blow down. It looks like something attacked the pipe that it was mounted on, because the pipe, which is metal, inch and a half, got snapped in half.
Mm. Yeah, well, that probably a bear.
They
can find a nest, and there's no holding them back.
They'll predate on bird houses. Oh, lovely. Mm.
Yeah.
Bad enough I had to bring in the seed.
Yeah. Yes, right. Well, hopefully the bear will have moved on by now, and another bird nest box might work, but that's what they do.
We already put the box back up.
Oh, good. Well, I would give it a go, and that's what bears do.
Bonnie, thank you for the call.
And if people out there are feeding birds still, be very conscious of the possibility of bears in the neighborhood, because it's just a matter, they don't mix.
Can I go back to one of the things you just said?
Uh-oh.
Scarlet tanager.
Yes.
Green. Why call it a scarlet tanager?
Actually, the scientific name says olive tanager. But here's the thing. The females and the young males are that olive. In fact, the old males are olive brown coloration. But the springtime male during the nesting season is a bright red and black, brilliant black, right? And the common name is accurate. The scientific name is accurate. And the reason for that is it happens with many of the bird species. Rose-breasted grosbeak, red-winged blackbirds, cardinal. Is that the males are very brilliantly gaudy, color-patterned, flashy, catchy,
yeah.
And the females are dull. I like our system a lot better.
Let's go to Chuck. I'm not touching that one, Rich. Let's go to Chuck in Hudson. You're on.
I have about 10 windows on my patio, den.
Okay.
And last year I had so many robins banging up against those windows.
Mm-hmm.
What's the story on that?
Well, again, it's the robins are looking at their reflection and trying to fend off their reflection, which they perceive to be another male. And so they're trying to get rid of that male. So the trick to that is to reduce the reflection. You could do
what
that by...
I did. Newspaper on every window.
If you put it on the inside of the window, that might even increase the reflective value of the glass. So... If you can put it on the outside for a little while, and that will work, and after a little while you can take it down. Or you can put some window cleaner on the window.
Soap.
And
ketchup.
You could, but that might backfire.
All right.
If you do that, then it will cut the reflection. That's the whole name of the game, is to eliminate the attraction. The attraction is the image. And that's caused by the mirror effect of the glass.
All right, Chuck, thanks a lot. Let's go quickly to Tom in Corinth. Tom, you're on.
Hello.
Yeah, only have about a minute here.
Hello?
Yeah, you have about a minute. Go ahead.
Hello?
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 Hello? Okay, goodbye. Sorry, Tom in Corinth. I apologize. Very quickly, let's go to Catherine in Troy. Catherine, you only have about 30 seconds.
Okay, how do I keep black starlings, I think they're starlings, from eating all of my suet and scaring all my birds away?
There's very little you can do about it other than to put more suet out or cut out the supply for the time being, and then they will have to move on. Be less hospitable.
I did stop for about 3 days, and then I put it back out again, and they came back. So how long to take the suet away?
I would say, you know, just suffer through a week or so.
Because I'm afraid I'm going to lose all my other great birds.
Isn't that a danger?
What? No.
Losing all the other birds?
No, not at all.
Yeah, that they'll go eat elsewhere and not come back.
No, they'll be back. They'll learn to love you. But
the starlings will go away, though.
Let's hope, at least for the time being. But they, you know, the starlings are starlings. They like suet. They like you.
Okay, and that is where we will leave it. Rich Guthrie, thank you so much for being here, my friend. The email address once again is
Richard P, as in Peter, Guthrie @gmail.com.
All right, and good luck with the tour.
Hey, we're going to have fun.
The Cuba Show. Support comes from George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family-owned and operated for over 75 years. Serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation services and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors. Serving the Northeast since 2001. StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. And Empire State Youth Orchestras, presenting Music Without Borders, a celebration and concert featuring the debut of Chime, a musical program dedicated to underprivileged youth. The Palace Theater this Saturday, esyo.org. Thanks to Rich once again for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy for being at the controls. Bruce Herbach answered the phones. Our producer is Jessica Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's the Car Show with Gordon Fricke. Now stand by for news.